Hello and welcome to Let Your Life Be a Sermon podcast. I'm Vanetta L. West. I'm so grateful for you being a part of this very special episode, a part of our series, Conversations in My Garden. I'm with a great friend today where we're going to talk about the power of being, the power of being. And with me today is Bonita Hampton Smith.
Hi, welcome, there. Bonita. Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really honored and grateful, and thank you for inviting me to what I believe is a wonderful conversation, into a wonderful conversation. And thank you for allowing me in your garden. How about that?
Oh, you're welcome. Absolutely. I think I didn't give all the things you are. I want to be sure I provide information without titles, you know, just as an author. Even the books you haven't released yet, I believe you'll release many books and have bestsellers and provide insight and counsel and wisdom for people across the globe. I know your heart for youth, for families, and just for getting a message of being to people everywhere. So that's why I say it'd be great to have Bonita talk about something that we talk about often anyway, and just continuing the conversation. How do we shift as human beings from always having a list of things to do to get into the place where we have become and we are being and we realize what our purpose is and we're walking fully in that? So let's just start with kind of defining, what does it mean to you when we say being?
You know, I was thinking about that this morning as we, you know, I knew I was having this conversation with you. And for me, being is being, just getting to a place you're really synchronized and you're at home in your soul. When you're at home in your soul and you know who you are and you're not defined by anything outside of you, but you're totally synchronized with your heart, mind, and soul, and you live out of that. You live out of your isness. And it's very key to be able to see who you are, because if you can't see, I said, if you can't see, you can't be. So if you can see who you are and you just be at home and you're at home in your soul, and you'll show up that way. You realize you're no longer in competition with anyone else. You're defined by everything that's within you, because everything you're called to be, everything you're called to do, it's inside of you. And when you're comfortable with that, to me, that's your being. It's showing up in your isness, showing up exactly who you are. But you have to see it in order to be it.
I think for us, that's something we didn't get to until later in life. And I'm always thinking about, how do we get that to young people?
Yeah.
How do you get that to, well, imagine if we would have had this knowledge that there was a being we could come into, yeah, where we don't feel like we have to compete and we have to wake up every day worried about who's going to take something. But we start to say, hey, this is what I'm gifted to do. Like when I first went to college, I was, I was going to major in something that would just make me money.
Yeah.
And I had a teacher who saw who I was, a high school journalism teacher, J.C. Johnson, who said, you're a great writer and you're a great thinker. You should major in English. I can't imagine what would have happened if that teacher hadn't looked at me and said, I see something in who you are, not necessarily what you can do, but that's a shift. But everybody doesn't have that at a young age. And even though I had it, that didn't stop me from graduating from college and saying, I got to get out here, you know, run this race. How do you think we get that to people at a young age? How do we get that to children?
Yeah. You know, as you were saying that, I start having this vision of gardens. You know, I grew up in the country. My mother had a garden. And when you plant whatever seed that is, you know what vegetable it is, you know what you're cultivating. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times parents, you know, we were brought up, they said, train up a child the way they should go. When they're older, they beat them. So instead, that training up a child in the way that they should go, that training is identifying what's in that child. You know, if my mother, I used to write all the time when I was growing up, but my mother didn't see me necessarily as a writer. But when you begin to identify those gifts and you begin to cultivate it and nurture it, making sure the child has the right tools they need. Oh, they're gifted gifted in painting. Let me buy them some artwork. They're gifted in singing. Let me give them some classes. They're gifted in writing. Let me give them some time, some quiet space, creative space, beginning to cultivate that which we see. Because if you can see it and teach your child to see it and begin to affirm that in your child, let them know how great they are. Let them know how wonderful they are. If they're great at math, then cultivate those gifts. Mm. Your teacher saw something and she kept speaking it, watering it. And that's what our children need, you know, and that's what I needed. I spent many years lost trying to find myself. And so I didn't always wake up in my business. I woke up, you know, at one time I was suicidal because I just could not see myself. And it's one of the greatest gifts a person can give their child is the ability to see who they are. If you can see who you are, you will show up in that. But when we don't see who we are, we'll buy into things, we'll do things, we'll find ourselves in places and spaces that we're not even supposed to be in. So I think that's how you do it. But now you see it and you cultivate it and you call it out and you water it and you speak goodness on it, you know? Training up a child.
I also know that some of the things that happen in our lives prepare us for who we be, for lack of a better phrase. So there's that balance too of sometimes I look back on the experiences I've had and I realize they help cultivate things in me to prepare me for this moment. Yeah. So there's that balance of knowing, hey, there's some things that are preparing me, but how do I look and see the things that aren't preparing me? And to be honest, sometimes we just gotta pay bills. That's life. but you still can come into being.
Yeah.
What do you think, if you had to say there's one session or one topic that would help people understand how to be, what do you think that topic would be? What kind of conversation should we be having?
So I hope I'm answering your question right, but the thing that I think people should teach their children, or even for adults, for me, that one topic is meditation.
Mm.
When you really want to understand how to be, you have to get quiet and you have to drown out all the noise. And, you know, we've been talking about this whole subject of redefining love, you know, in some of the work we do. But some of us have to redefine or discover who we really are. You have to drown out all the stories you've been told. And that comes in a place of quietness and stillness and meditation. In meditation, for me, that's the place where I synchronize with God. I synchronize with the Holy Spirit. And I let Him tell me who I am. And I synchronized with the mind of Christ. You know, He said, let this mind be in you that's also in Christ Jesus. And I'm thinking about this brilliant mind. You know, Christ walked this earth like one of the most brilliant people. And the other thing, Vanetta, is when you meditate and you synchronize, the one thing I thought about Christ too is that when people meet Vanetta, when they meet Benita, they don't just meet us, then they experience us.
Mm-hmm.
They have an experience. So it's not that you're just doing and doing. When people come in contact with you, they leave better off, they leave more informed. It's because you have synchronized with your being and now they're experiencing you. So that one topic for me, if we were to talk about anything to tap into your isness and your being, is to meditate, get quiet, and recognize the stillness of God. Connect with God in you. Synchronize with the mind, heart, DNA of God so that you can show up in that. And we have to take time to do that. So meditation for me, stillness and quietness is key.
Yeah, and that creates an awakening.
Yeah.
I think with an awakening, for me, has always come urgency. Like when I wake up to something, I experience a persistence and a sense of urgency that I see who I am more clearly now. Let me get to it. Which is good in some sense, but it's also like, no, let me, if there's a process, if there's something else I need to learn, I see it, but am I prepared for it? So I'm coming into this place of being. What you just talked about too is atmosphere. In another episode from this series, we talked about atmosphere, how we can create, and we do, whether we realize it or not. And
we do.
When we show up, we bring an atmosphere with us. And I tell people at the church that I pastor, we are an atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just by myself, when I come to a place, I am bringing a certain atmosphere and a demeanor. And content of what we're bringing when we come to a space.
Well, you know, one thing that you always say, and I don't know if you, I know you know it, but you always say, I want to release the kingdom where I go. Everywhere mm-hmm. I go, I want to release the kingdom. And that too is that experience. What if people are experiencing what it feels like to be connected with the kingdom, be in the kingdom, you always say that. So I think that to your point is also part of that, creating that atmosphere that when I leave your presence, I should have had a snippet of what it feels like to be a part of the kingdom of God.
That's true. Yeah. People don't know what to call it, though. I had a CEO of one organization tell me, she asked me, did I know I had a something that shows up with me when I come to our meetings, the virtual meetings. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you have the things get calmer, the way you're talking about things, you're bringing something. And she called it Zen. And I joked with her, I said, that's Jesus. I don't know what Zen is.
Hey, Jesus got some Zen.
Yeah, Jesus got some Zen, I guess, but yeah, and then she laughed at that because we don't, but I think that was a moment because we don't share a faith tradition, she and I. But it was a moment where we laughed about it because, yeah, I don't know what, I don't put my finger on it. I don't try to really analyze it. I just know that if we are, our hearts are bent in the best interest of humanity and people, when we show up, that feeling should come with us and that atmosphere. Yeah. That's a part of being. And we can do that everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a part of being. And it's also for me, when you were talking about the young lady, she was like, you know, that's Zen. And you said, that's Jesus. And you said, we don't share the same faith. You know, Dr. King talks about this interconnectedness and interrelatedness. And mm-hmm. when you said that, that's exactly what I heard and what I felt, that person felt this connection with you. Mm-hmm. And when we realize that we're all interconnected and we're all interrelated, that's part of the being. Part of my being's understanding that I'm connected to the fabric of humanity, that I'm part of this great tapestry. And so yeah. when you show up on that Zoom, that young lady, and she realized something happened where she felt that connectivity mm-hmm. through that Zoom, something happened, like, whoo, she brought some ease. And how do you bring that kind of ease? Because of the interrelatedness. I mean, because mm-hmm. of the interconnectedness, that's how people, you know, can be on a Zoom and all of a sudden I'm feeling different when I get off. You know, you said yeah. something to me yesterday and it really blessed me. You said, you know, this relationship we have, it causes me to see and think, you know, and see things differently. It makes me, you know, and when you said that, it really blessed me because, you know, I feel the same way. Iron, like iron sharpening iron. That's how the experience should be amongst, you know, when you show up and you're in your yeah. business, when I enter your presence, you enter mine, there should be this exchange and hopefully it's for the better. Now, sometimes, depending on what you're being,
you know, but we always end it with, we got to do better.
we got to do better. It got to be
a conversation where we just been like, ooh-wee, I'm frustrated about this. This is happening. But then at the end, it's, you know, we got to, how can we do better with this? That's one of the things I appreciate, a space to just be frustrated or yeah. be agitated about something. But yeah. then to end it with, okay. How do we move forward? What do we do? What are the solutions? We need spaces where there are some solutions and there's an encouragement to move beyond that moment. Because often in my life, relationships have been, you agitated and you stay there. Because right. nobody has, now I'm saying I didn't have the capacity either to say, let's get beyond this. What's next? Yeah. I think that's a key part of being too. Knowing that this is a moment and saying, okay, how do I improve my response? Because being to some extent should be consistent. I shouldn't yeah. just change and waver based on what I encounter. There has to be some consistency. You know, for us, I think Christ is an excellent representation, the best of consistency of character.
Yeah.
You know, they say he changes not. He right. just, this is who I am. And he even told them that in John chapter 8. He said, before Abraham was, I am. I think he had the understanding of, I've always existed. And, you know, I believe spirit existed before body. That there was always somebody we were purposed to be. And we got into these bodies to fulfill that. And how do we tap into that? What do we do? And I think, as Dr. Miles Monroe says, everybody is searching for that. Everybody's searching for the kingdom, their original intent, and what they were born and purposed to do. And when we get to that, that's our place of being.
Yeah. You know, you said something about the consistency, and I want to share a practical tool that I do for me when I feel like I'm being inconsistent, when I feel like I'm falling short. One of the things that I started to do is I stopped saying, I'm just I'm a person who's a flawed individual.
Right.
I've changed my language to say I'm a person evolving. And once I get to that level of enlightenment, I'm going to be different. But the practicality behind that, when you were talking about being consistent, I do a lot of self-checking at night. I check, you know, when I review my day and I say, you know what, you should have handled that conversation a little better. What could you have done differently? And I start to probe myself. The other day I was in a conversation with a young lady, and I'm starting to notice, Vanetta, that if I'm in a conversation and my attitude is going in the wrong way, many of us can identify when our energy is changing. You know, you can tell, like, this person is about to really tick me off. And so what kind of internal dialogue do you need to have with yourself to change that, to not allow that person to begin to cause you to come out of pocket and act and show up differently? And so I'm having more internal dialogues with myself as I discover people coming, when someone's coming at me, whether they're in a bad mood, having a bad day, don't allow them to change your temperature. Don't allow them to adjust your temperature. As you said the other day, you know, quote Dr. King, you be the thermostat, you know, not the thermometer. You know, you set the temperature. And so one of the practical steps is to begin to, A, when you feel it coming on, don't say a word. Just be quiet. Be quiet. I call that other person inside of me Nita, because that's who I grew up in Marietta, Arkansas. Nita, just be quiet. And think about what you're about to say and make sure you center yourself. And sometimes when that person doesn't know it, I'm taking a deep breath. Like, I could talk to you and just breathe. And then make sure you center yourself before you respond. You know, so I just want to share that as a practicality. The other thing is, at nighttime, just really going over the day, did you show up as your best self? You know, did I show up as the highest expression of myself today? If I did, what can I do differently so that I can, you know, be better tomorrow? Not just do better, but be better. So for me, that's part of the evolution of congruency, to understand that I'm not all the way there. I'm still evolving. But if I do an assessment each day and check myself and listen to my friends check, you know, sometimes, you know, your friends will give you a check and you need to listen. They may not always give it the right way, but if the information is good, process that information. So that's, what are some of the ways you do your self-checks?
No, listen, I have, you know, I'm into music and books and I do self-checks. I have playlists for different things, for one thing. Like, if I feel like I need to improve in an area, I have songs that help me do that. And they cause me to start to ask myself questions, too. If I listen to Stevie Wonder singing Love's in Need of Love today, I'll ask myself, what did I do today? You know, how did I respond when this person said this? How did I show up? And then I've had to learn how to do that, not just in workplaces and on assignments, but with family. I'm asking myself more and more, how am I engaging my nieces and my nephew? How am I showing up for them? Because they're each so uniquely different that I'm trying to learn their personalities and how to be love in each one of their lives, so that I don't try to put them in a box and make them conform to what I think a child should do and should be. And it's just so many things that just come from, I call it sometimes, just being a decent human. That's it. We can just be decent, kind, loving people.
Yeah.
And when we try to do that, that begins to extend to all these different areas. So I, you know, if I ask what type of daughter am I being? I've been trying to spend more time strategic with my parents. You know, when they just saying, do you want me to take you on errands today? Mm-hmm. That love isn't this thing, and being isn't this thing that is real convoluted. I think it in the end, it's just showing up for people. Yeah. And showing up for humanity and doing that authentically.
Yeah.
And the way I can do it and not trying to copy the way someone else does it. So I'm trying to. And suspending labels, which is something I've been earnestly trying to do. Whatever label has been put on me throughout my life, I'm trying to not hold on to that label and feel like I need to yield to it. But realizing, no, who am I? And what am I purpose to do, really? Who am I to be? And I wanted to end talking about that because these labels are significant. When you mentioned that about, you know, most of us think we're just fallen people. I was in a session the other day and someone said, we're all sinners. And I said, mm-mm. Oh, no. She said, hey, by grace. I said, mm-mm. But then either you're going to be, to me, either you a sinner or you're a saint. Now, I know we all sin. But when you put a label on something, I'm struggling through all the labels, Benita. When I hear people say poor people, it's just something in me that doesn't like.
Yeah.
So why do you have to be poor people? Why we can't be grappling with poverty? Why we got to put a label on the whole person?
Yeah.
To make them poor, which has all kind of connotations. And often it's something people can't get out of all their lives. They have that label, poor people, or at-risk youth, or, you know, these different things, victims. All of this I'm questioning because I look at people and I say, I don't know if I want to label another human being as a victim.
Yeah.
Maybe the person who really, the person who harmed them or violated them carries something, but a person who was violated, why would we label them and give them a stigma to carry? How do labels and language impact our being?
You know, well, you know how I feel about labels, and we have this joke. I'm going to share it, but you know how I feel about labels, because I do think they divide quite often. They separate in our society. We've created classes with labels, and so people begin to come into situations with a perceived notion of who you are because labels come with a definition. They're labels because they define. You know, we have designer labels, you know. People are so crazy about labels that they're gonna get a fake label to look like a real label. And so it creates all this unnecessary confusion, and it doesn't allow for people to just really get to know each other. So for me, I agree with you. Labels are a way to separate and divide. I think the more we begin to understand our interrelatedness and our interconnectedness, that Ubuntu, I am because you are because I am, that we, Vanetta, you're part of me and I'm part of you. So the label is we. That's the only label. The label is us. The label is us united together as one fabric and tapestry. If we begin to see each other as seeing us as a whole humanity, that's the only label, humanity. That's the label. And so in humanity, what do we do to ensure that everyone is treated fairly, treated with dignity, respected and honored in their being? And so for me, labels are a way to separate and divide. And we do have to find a way to get away from it all. Yes, you do need definitions to understand issues and situations, but not labeling people, to your point. Labeling, you know, people, you know, well, she's underprivileged. You know, this person is, you know, marginalized and disenfranchised. Yeah. And I bought into some of the labels, you know, I've used the labels, but I do agree with you that we need to redefine. This is about humanity. This is about us. It's about we. It's about you. It's about me. And collectively, how do we make each other better? And when we get to that place and we understand that whatever happens to you, Vanetta, it's happening to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I agree. We need to find our pathway to humanity.
That's a good place to end, because Benita and I could talk all day, folks. This would be a 20-minute podcast that moves into a 2-hour-long discussion. We need to find our pathway to humanity. I believe that And I'm grateful for you for listening. I'm grateful for Benita Hampton Smith for being a guest on the Let Your Life Be Your Sermon podcast. And continue to listen and share and be a part. And let's let our lives be the most profound, powerful, influential, loving messages that we ever deliver. Thank you.